Young Bell was a go-getter. 2 years after he got to India, he was superintendent of the Male Orphan Asylum of Madras. In order to save money, Bell decided to try the Hindu system he'd seen, and found it led students quickly to docile cooperation, like parts of a machine. Furthermore, they seemed relieved not to have to think. Grateful to have their time reduced to rituals and routines as Frederick Taylor was to reform the American workplace 100 years later. In 1797, Bell, now 42, published an account of what he had seen and done. Pulling no punches, he praised Hindu drill as an effective impediment to learning, writing, and ciphering. Let me read that again. Pulling no punches, he praised Hindu drill as an effective impediment to learning, writing, and ciphering, and efficient control on reading development. A 20-year-old Quaker, Joseph Lancaster, read Bell's pamphlet and thought deeply on the method and concluded, ironically, that it would be a cheap way to awaken intellect in the lower classes, ignoring the Anglican's observation and Hindu experience that it did just the opposite. Lancaster began to gather poor children under his father's roof in Borough Road, London, to give them rudimentary instruction without a fee. Word spread, and children emerged from every alley, dive, and garret, craving to learn. Soon 1,000 children were gathering in the street. The Duke of Bedford heard about Lancaster and provided him with a single enormous schoolroom and a few materials. The monitorial system, as it was called, promised to promote a mental counterpart to the productivity of factories. Transforming dirty ghetto children into an orderly army attracted many observers. The fact that Lancaster's school ran at tiny cost with only one employee raised interest too. Invitations arrived to lecture in surrounding towns, where the Quaker expounded on what had now become his system. Lancaster schools multiplied under the direction of young men he personally trained. So talked about did the phenomenon become. It eventually attracted the attention of King George III himself, who commanded an interview with Joseph. Royal patronage followed on the stipulation that every poor child be taught to read the Bible. But with fame and public responsibility, another side of Lancaster showed itself. He became vain, reckless, improvident. Interested noblemen bailed him out after he fell deeply in debt and helped him found the British and Foreign School Society. But Lancaster hated being watched over and soon proved impossible to control. He left the organization his patrons erected, starting a private school which went bankrupt. By 1818, the Anglican Church, warming to Bell's insight that schooled ignorance was more useful than unschooled stupidity, set up a rival chain of factory schools that proved to be the handwriting on the wall for Lancaster. In the face of this competition, he fled to America, where his fame and his method had already preceded him. Meanwhile, in England, the whole body of dissenting sects gave Lancaster vociferous public support, thoroughly alarming the state church hierarchy. Prominent church laymen and clergy were not unaware that Lancaster's schools weren't playing by Hindu rules. The prospect of a literate underclass with unseemly ambitions was a window on a future impossible to tolerate. Bell had been recalled from his rectory in Dorset in 1807 to contest Lancaster's use of Hindu schooling. In 1811, he was named superintendent of an organization to oppose Lancaster's British and Foreign School Society. The National Society for Promoting the Education of the Poor in the Principles of the Established Church. Since those principles held that the poor were poor because the Lord wanted it that way, the content of the society's schooling leaves little about which we need to speculate. Bell was sent to plant his system in Presbyterian Scotland, while the patronage advantage of Bell's system schools contained and diminished the reach of Lancaster. For his services to the state, Bell was eventually buried in Westminster Abbey. At first, Lancaster was welcomed warmly in the United States. but his affection for children and his ability to awaken pride and ambition in his charges made him ultimately unacceptable to important patrons who were much more interested in spreading Bell's dumbed-down method without its Church of England baggage attached. Fortunately for their schemes, Lancaster grew even more shiftless, unmethodical, and incapable of sustained effort or principled action. In the remaining 20 years of his life, Lancaster ranged from Montreal to Caracas, disowned by Quakers for reasons I've been unable to discover. Once he declared it would be possible to teach illiterates to read fluently in 20 to 90 days, which is certainly true. At the age of 60, he was run over by a carriage in New York and died a few hours later. But while he died an outcast, his system outlived him, or at least his system bearing his name did, albeit more Bell's than Lancaster's. It accustomed an influential public to expect streets to be clear of the offspring of the poor and to expenditures of tax money to accomplish this end. The first Lancaster school was opened in New York City in 1806. By 1829, the idea had spread to the Mexican state of Texas, with stops as far west as Cincinnati, Louisville, and Detroit. The governors of New York and Pennsylvania recommended general adoption to their legislatures. What exactly was a Lancaster school? Its essential features involved one large room stuffed with anywhere from 300 to 1,000 children under the direction of a single teacher. The children were seated in rows. The teacher was not there to teach, but to be a bystander and inspector. Students, ranked in a paramilitary hierarchy, did the actual teaching. What the master says should be done. When the pupils, as well as the schoolmaster, understand how to act and learn on this system, the system, not the master's vague, discretionary, uncertain judgment, will be in practice. In common school, the authority of the master is personal, and the rod is his scepter. His absence is an immediate signal for confusion. But in a school conducted on my plan, when the master leaves the school, the business will go on as well in his absence as in his presence. Here, without forcing the matter, our modern pedagogus technologus, harbinger of future computerized instruction. In such a system, teachers and administrators are forbidden to depart from instructions elsewhere written. But while dumbing children down was the whole of the government school education in England, it was only part of the story in America, and a minor one until the 20th century.